We welcome you to the third day of our Brajmandala Parikrama. Today, Dr. Alwa called me and reported that although His Holiness Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj remains in a very dangerous, somewhat critical condition, he continues to be manifesting literally miraculous signs of improvement. Yesterday we heard from Raghunath Prabhu, one of the top neurologists of all of India, said after the first day there was not even a 1% chance of his survival. And he expressed to devotees that there was not much he could do, but he would do whatever he can. But as of yesterday, he said, what he is seeing is impossible. The only explanation is it must be the intervention of Krishna. Coming from a person who is not a devotee, this is an amazing realization. Today, Jaipatak Maharaj was insisting they take the ventilator off, take the tubes out of his throat, take the tubes out of his arms. But they refused to do so. But it's a good sign. It's a very wonderful sign. Through praying for the welfare of a Vaishnav, not only does Krishna hear and respond to our prayers according to his own inconceivable will, but we become very dear to him for expressing and feeling such a heartfelt concern for his devotee. So let us take a few moments to offer our prayers for Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj. Today throughout Vrindavan, and actually by Srila Prabhupada's mercy throughout the entire world, millions of people are celebrating one of the most joyous of all festivals, Govardhan Puja. It is a day of singing, dancing, praying, and feasting. And especially remembering Krishna, who is the absolute truth, the source of all material and spiritual existence, and how he reciprocates with the love of his devotees. Govardhan Puja is a pastime where we find Krishna transforming the most dangerous crisis into a joyful celebration. Bhakti is like that. We see it throughout our Vaishnav histories, that when a devotee is put into a traumatic condition, a condition that is inconceivable and beyond that devotee's power to control, the devotee turns to Krishna, knowing there's no other shelter. And how Krishna reciprocates. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is about that theme again and again. What is the glory of the Pandavas? They lost everything. Their good names were disgraced by Duryodhana. They were rejected from society, banished to the forest. Ultimately had to fight a horrible war, although they tried every possible way to avoid it. And the culmination of all those years and years and years of crisis and apparent tragedy . Arjuna emotionally totally broke down. His bow fell from his hand. Tears poured from his eyes. He became white, pale. He couldn't even stand up. He was so bewildered, so confused. And he turned to Krishna. There was nowhere else for him to turn. Karpanya doso pahatasva bhava. Krishna, now I'm yours. All my own arrangements, all my own intelligence has failed me. There's nothing I can do. It was then that the Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all the knowledge of the Vedas, emerged in that situation. Dhruva Maharaj, what a crisis he suffered. Some of you today went to Madhuban. Please say Hari Bol if you went to Madhuban. You must have had a nice time there from the resounding vibration of Hari Bol. He's a four-year-old child. Harsh, cruel words from his stepmother pierced his heart like arrows. It was unbearable. The only person he could turn to for any relief was his father. But his father, due to material attachment, ignored him. Didn't want to disappoint or contradict his wife. So Dhruva ran to his mother, lips trembling, eyes crying out tears. He needed some support. This was a serious crisis for this child. This is serious child abuse on an emotional level. And his mother, all she could do was cry. There's nothing I can do to help you. But your stepmother, what she said is correct. Your father doesn't love me, he loves her. And what she said is correct, you should worship the Supreme Lord. The stepmother said you should worship the Supreme Lord with the prayer of being born in your next life in my womb. Then you will have the privilege of sitting with your father. Dhruva said, only the Supreme Lord can give us shelter. Dhruva couldn't even remain in his palace. He ran out to the forest and he came here to Vrindavan. Well, actually, first he came to the forest and Narada Muni saw his desperate condition and understood that he's receptive. Tested his sincerity and then told him to come to Vrindavan, one of the 12 forests, Madhuban, on the bank of the river Yamuna. Worship Lord Krishna there. Fix your mind on him. Chant his holy names. If Dhruva did not go through that crisis, he would have just remained a nice boy. But because of what happened to him, he saw God directly and achieved the highest state of spiritual liberation, ecstatic love, and became the ruler of the world. Also at Madhuban, where you went today, is where Ambarish Maharaj performed his fast, an Ekadasi fast for 1 year. Because Vrindavan is such a holy place. Even back in the Satya Yuga, long, long ago, people were coming here to purify their hearts and connect with God. At that time, Durvas Muni happened to come and wanted food. Ambarish said, I will arrange. Durvas Muni said, I want to take my bath in Yamuna first. He was taking a long time. Meanwhile, it was reported to Ambarish Maharaj that if you do not break your fast by this particular time, which is right now, all your year of fasting will be, the benefits will be negated. And he was fasting not for himself, but for blessings to be upon everyone else. So he took a drop of water, Charanamrit. Durvas Muni was such a powerful mystic yogi. He understood that and was enraged. And he really blasphemed Ambarish Maharaj. If you read the Bhagavatam, the harsh words he was speaking, and coming from someone like that, it's unbearable. Then he created from a hair on his head a fiery demon to devour Ambarish Maharaj. Serious crisis. Ambarish just folded his hands. Krishna, I'm yours. Maro birako bijo icha tohar. Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught us this prayer. My Lord, if you want, you can kill me. If you like, you can protect me. I'm yours. You can do anything you like with me. I'm your servant. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, Ashlasya vapadatam panashtumam adarshanam maramahatam korotuva. Yathata tata vitatatu lanpato mat purana natastu se eva napuraha. This is the highest prayers of the gopis for Krishna, of Sri Radharani for Krishna. But even for an ordinary devotee, we can apply it to our own lives. Krishna is the controller of all controllers. Tumi sarveshvareshvara brajendra nandana. My Lord, if you like, you can embrace me, you can trample on me, or you can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You have every right to treat me any way you like, but I am your loving service, your servant, unconditionally. Unconditional service is something very deep. We talk about it. We hear about it. We think about it. But it takes very profound realization to understand what it really means. Yasya hamanugrimani harikshetha tanam shanai. Krishna may give us everything, he may take everything away. In that situation, we turn to the Lord. That's what Ambarish did. And the Lord was there to protect him. And Prahlad Maharaj, he went through some serious crisis. Not only was he thrown in fire and pits of snakes and stabbed with tridents, and fed deadly poison, but probably as much or as vicious as any of those things were the cruel words of Hiranyakashipu. That is Prahlad's glory. That he turned to Krishna. And many devotees throughout time, they turn to Krishna and they die, or they turn to Krishna and they live. But their lives are success, because when they turn to Krishna in death, they attain eternal life. And when they turn to Krishna in life, they attain Krishna. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die, because Vaishnavas die to live and live to spread the holy name around. Death is inevitable. When Krishna says, Konteya pratijanehim name bhakta pranashyati, I always protect my devotee. His protection is perfect. It is not necessarily according to our conception. And even if devotees make mistakes and are punished for their mistakes, if they learn their lessons and sincerely become humble and turn to God, Krishna is there to deliver them. He manifests himself in their hearts. Govardhan Puja is a story of how the greatest of all devotees in all of creation were in an impossible situation of impending death and destruction, not only to themselves, but to all that was dear to them, all that was near to them, and even Krishna himself. That was their feeling. Previously, at Kaliya Ghat, where you all went the last 2 days, for hours Krishna was in the coils of Kaliya, a massive serpent. No one else was in danger. But all the residents of Vrindavan were just standing along the banks of that lake. They were crying. Their hearts were breaking. They were on the verge of death. But through it all, it served to intensify their feelings toward Krishna, intensified their love toward Krishna. And Krishna slipped out of the coils, danced on his head, and performed the most wonderful festival, where everyone was just watching in amazement. A performance that has never been reenacted since. Throughout Vrindavan Leela, here in this Bhoma Brajabhumi, again and again there are situations of very, very serious crisis. But all of them, perhaps the most severe, was during this Govardhan Puja. With your permission, I will narrate the story. Thank you. Actually, when I ask your permission, I'm also trying to invoke your blessings and invoke your empowerment. Because even if one is not a very good speaker, and even if one is not a very realized soul, if the audience is extremely eager to hear, with open, receptive hearts, then despite my own disqualifications, for your sake, since you're the ones who put me on this stage, for your sake, Krishna can speak wonderful words. So I have no qualifications myself. I'm simply trying to repeat the message that Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas have given, but I'm depending on your eagerness and your enthusiasm to hear, to attract the message to come through. So I once again ask your permission to speak Govardhan Leela. Thank you very much. In Vrindavan, the Supreme Lord, who is one, there is one God. He is worshipped in all various religions with different names, with different traditions, different rituals, even various conceptions. The sun and the sky is one, but it appears in different places, in different times, and is called by different names. And according to the time, place, and circumstance, the Vedas explain, the Lord appears either directly, or through his son, or through his prophet, or through his incarnations, to reestablish the pure religious principle and to protect the devotees. And what is the pure religious principle? It is Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma is the awakening of the dormant love for God that is within our hearts. And this is the essence of all real spiritual paths. Sometimes, all the time, God is declared to be all-powerful, all-knowing, all-merciful. But in Vrindavan, the Absolute Truth brings his devotees to a level of love that is beyond that. They know he's all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-merciful. But their love for him is so deep. Krishna wants to have an intimate relationship with them. So by his yogamaya potency, the energy that brings deeper relationship with God, they love him as a friend, as a son, or as a lover. That is Vrindavan. Krishna had already performed such unbelievable activities here in Vrindavan. Yesterday we discussed Putana, Shakatasura, Trinavarta, Kaliya, Vatsasura, Bakasura. There was a massive fire and he swallowed it. Even though they were seeing this little child Krishna doing all these things, it was obvious that he's not an ordinary child. He's the Supreme God. But then he would become hungry and cry, or he would do some mischief, or he wouldn't get proper attention and he would feel really disturbed. And they would become so overwhelmed with love for him that they just couldn't fathom that this could be God. He's our child. He's our friend. He's our lover. All these other things, we may not understand them. It must be due to our pious actions that God keeps protecting him. This is Vrindavan. So, one day, Krishna happened to see Nanda Maharaj and the gopas and the gopis making elaborate arrangements for a ceremony. The Brahmins were coming, and there was massive quantities of food being prepared, and there was decorations being arranged. And Krishna asked his father, Nanda Maharaj, by the way, at the time, Krishna was 7 years old. He asked Nanda Maharaj, please tell me, Father, what are you doing? And who are you doing it for? And what is the purpose of all these arrangements? Nanda Maharaj explained that for many, many generations, at this time of the year, we perform this offering to Indra. Indra is the king of the heavenly worlds, and he is especially the superintendent in the universe that is in charge of the rains. Because we are a cowherd community and our livelihood is based on the grains that are growing and the grass to feed the cows, we are dependent on rain. Without rain, nothing could live. So we must express our gratitude and pay a debt, a token debt to Indra to please him. So will he will continue to pour rains upon our land. Krishna told Nanda Maharaj that don't think that I'm too young to understand all these things. And don't keep any secrets from me. Because for relatives and friends, there should be no secrets. After hearing Nanda Maharaj's explanation, Krishna in his mind began to think, this is for Indra. I have to save Indra from his false pride. Krishna tells in Gita, Sarvasya cha hum hridishani vishto matasmiti rajnanam apohanam cha. He is seated within the heart of every living being. He is the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. God in the heart is the witness of everything. He knows you better than you or anyone else could ever know you. He knows your every thought. He knows your every motivation. He knows your every word, your every action, and why you do it. And when Krishna tells that he protects his devotee, that doesn't mean he just physically protects us from harm. Because eventually the body has to die anyway. On a higher level, he protects us from any of the anartas within us that keep us away from him. And Krishna is willing to take risks according to, because when he gives us a test, we have the free will and independence to respond either the right way or the wrong way. So Krishna in the heart of Indra understood, he's my devotee. And he's a very good devotee. I know in the scriptures he's used a lot of times to show us what we should not do. But Krishna would not use just an ordinary neophyte devotee to teach all these lessons to the world for all time to come. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita as well as Srimad Bhagavatam we read, when Indra performs a yajna, Vishnu personally comes on Garuda and eats what's offered to him. Now, when we do puja in the deity room, we know that Krishna's eating it if we offer it with faith and love through the parampara. But for Indra, when he offers to the deity, Krishna comes down on Garuda and eats it right in front of him and blesses him. He's not just a small-time little devotee. He's a devotee. But little 7-year-old Krishna, standing here in Vrindavan, is thinking mercifully toward Indra. He's too proud. He has so much power. He's so beautiful. He has so much strength, so much fame, immense wealth, and unlimited opportunities to enjoy and to control. And he's supposed to be doing it all as an agent of God. But it's gotten to his head. He thinks, I am the doer. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhritam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shanti mrichchati. Krishna gives us what Prabhupada says, the peace formula. To be really peaceful, what is required is to understand these three principles. That sarva loka maheshwaram, Krishna is the proprietor of everything. He's the proprietor of all the assets and wealth in the world. He's the proprietor of my body. He's the proprietor of all my abilities. He's the proprietor of all my intelligence. And Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. And therefore everything should be used as an instrument for his pleasure. That's what bhakti means. Bhakti or devotion is the natural condition of the soul. It's our inherent nature. Yat karoshi rasyasi, yatapasyasi kaunteya. That whatever we do it as an instrument and offer it to Krishna for the pleasure of God. Knowing that he is the supreme friend, the ultimate friend for all of us. If we just have those three principles understood in our heart, we can achieve eternal lasting peace. Krishna wants to give us that. But due to our conditionings and due to our false ego, we have the tendency to make the wrong choices. And as soon as we make the wrong choice, we become implicated in the reaction to that choice. But worse than getting implicated is we become conditioned to that misconception, and it becomes a very, very integral part of our personality, our conditionings. No baby is born in this world with a longing to smoke cigarettes. In fact, the first time anyone smokes, it's miserable. Like that. But because everyone else looks so cool smoking cigarettes, it's in the movies, it's on television, and the people on the corner are doing it, and the girls like them, and the boys like them, so I'm going to somehow or other learn to like it. And then you learn to like it by your own free will. But then after some time, because you've done it so many times, it becomes such a part of your identity. If you don't have it, it's all you could think about. On a more subtle level, every choice we make creates habit to make us inclined to do it again. And those habits become deeper and deeper and deeper. So when we're going off course, through the words of the scriptures, through the teachings of the Vaishnavas and the Gurus, we're instructed how we have to overcome these habits, especially the conditioning of false pride. In the Christian world, it is said, pride cometh before the fall. Vasudev the leper, he had such extreme leprosy. He was suffering so bad, banished from society due to the contagiousness of that disease. But Lord Chaitanya embraced him, and the leprosy disappeared. And Vasudev was really concerned. Now everyone will know that God himself cured me of my leprosy. I am such an object of his mercy. What if I become proud? Even if you become proud of mercy that's given to you, it can spoil your devotion. Therefore, devotees who are sincere, when mercy is given, they feel humbled by that mercy, not proud. We become proud of Krishna. We become proud of the spiritual masters and of the Vaishnavas for bestowing that mercy upon me. But for me, We're humbled by that mercy. Pride is very deep. And sometimes we cannot recognize it. But Krishna sees. It's a wall between you and him, between us and him. And he does the needful. Through his agents within this material existence. So, Indra, very proud. Very difficult not to be proud when you're a king of heaven. And it's not that just some, you know, children on the street playing cricket are coming up and saying Jai Indra. There are sages, the rishis, the demigods, the Vedas are saying Jai Indra. So he becomes proud. So Krishna's thinking, I have to protect my devotee. I am going to crush the pride of Indra and restore his real pure service attitude. So with this in mind, he replied to Nanda Maharaj. He said, my dear father, what do you need Indra for? Indra has nothing to do with the rain. He's just an instrumental cause. The real cause is our karma. If we perform good work, then according to the laws of nature, there will be good results. If we perform bad work, then the laws of nature is we will have to suffer. So we're all good people. We're all protecting cows and doing pious work. So the rain has to come because it's our good karma. Indra has nothing to do with it. He may send it, but he is obliged to give according to our karma. He is under the control of karma. We are under the control of karma. So we should just act properly. The three modes of material nature are controlling the whole material existence. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. Now, creation is due to the effect of Rajaguna, the mode of passion. So for all these grains to be created, it's the mode of passion. It's the mode of passion that creates the clouds and pours down the rain. What's Indra? He's just a puppet in the hands of the mode of passion. So there's no need to worship all these gods. We're cowherd people. We're dependent on the blessings of the Brahmins. We're dependent on the abundant milk of the cows. We're dependent on the strength of the bulls to toil our fields. And we're dependent on Govardhan Hill, which is feeding so much luscious grass to all of our cows and bulls. Dear Father, work is worship. If we just work properly, we will get the proper karmic results because the modes of nature will respond. So don't worry about all these ceremonies for gods or demigods. Let us take all the paraphernalia that we have collected for Indra Puja and worship the Brahmins, the cows, and Govardhan Hill. Krishna spoke so sweetly. Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd man, more than anything else, they just wanted to please Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj asked, well, how should we go about this Govardhan Puja? And Krishna told, get all the grains we have in stock and all the milk products, the ghee, the yogurt, the butter, and get all the vegetables and all the fruits, and let's bring together the best cooks and the best Brahmins to make a gigantic, glorious feast. We'll make sweet cakes and spicy cakes, and we'll make mountains of rice and mountains of savories like pakoras and samosas, and we'll make mountains of laddus and sweets, and we'll make gigantic pots and lakes of payasam sweet rice and other such nectarine beverages, and mountains of sabjis, vegetables and fruits. Everything we have, and we will offer it to Govardhan Hill. And after offering it all to Govardhan Hill, we will feed everyone without discrimination. Everyone will have a grand feast. We'll feed all the animals, whatever they want to eat. And then after this, we will celebrate and we will do parikrama by circumambulating the Govardhan Hill. So let us not hesitate, let us begin the preparations. So everyone in Vrindavan, for Krishna's pleasure, was immersed in preparing for the Govardhan Puja. And massive mountains of food. Because Nanda Maharaj, he had 900,000 cows. And the soil, due to his love, his devotion, and his, it was just flourishing crops coming out. The Anakuta ceremony was unbelievable. And they offered it all to Govardhan Hill. At that time, Krishna was standing with all the gopas and the gopis. But simultaneously, he appeared on top of the mountain Govardhan in an immense, gigantic form. Nobody could believe what they were seeing. Krishna was standing on top of Govardhan. He was as big as Govardhan Hill. And everyone realized right then and there that Govardhan, he's not just a mountain, he's a person. Krishna was establishing at that moment that Govardhan Hill was none different from him. And then, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, with thousands of millions of hands, Giriraj scooped up every morsel of all those tremendous mountains of foodstuff and ate it. Not only all around Govardhan Hill, they were doing it. And his hands were going everywhere. And simultaneously, even as far as Nandagaon, some devotees just heard about this and they were cooking to be part of the festival. And Giriraj was reaching his hand all the way there, miles and miles away, and taking it and eating it. And after he finished everything, there wasn't a particle left anywhere in Brajabhumi of any foodstuff. With a resounding, thunderous voice, he cried out. With a resounding voice, he cried out. Three times, please. Hariya! 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 which is translated into English as, give me more. Krishna is unlimited. Then there was nothing else to offer him. So some devotees offered him some tulsi leaves. And Govardhan said, I am satisfied. But then, to everyone's wonder, suddenly all that bhoga manifested exactly from where Giriraj took it from. Again, there were mountains, but now it was all Giriraj Mahaprasad. And under Krishna's instruction, there was a wonderful feast. Everyone was eating to their full satisfaction. It was the ultimate food for life program. The origin. Everyone was so happy. And then Krishna said, now we should do parikrama of Giriraj, to worship Giriraj and worship the Brahmins and the cows. They were giving the cows all fresh, succulent grasses and decorating them very beautiful with silks. And they were decorating them with beautiful paintings on their body from natural herbs. And all the gopis got on ox carts and the cowherd men, and there were musicians playing, and Brahmins were doing yajnas and chanting mantras, and there were horns and bells and stringed instruments and drums being beaten, and everyone was dancing. It was ecstatic. What a festival. Why was it so ecstatic? Because Krishna was so pleased. Krishna was just so happy to see this Anukuta. And all the Brijabasis, seeing Krishna's happiness, surcharged them with unlimited happiness. They circumambulated Giriraj, dancing, singing, smiling, loving. It was a wonderful festival. And then they all went to their homes. There was one person in the universe that was not happy about this festival. Please chant the name of that person. Correct. Indra was furious. He could not control his anger. Krishna warns us in the Bhagavad Gita, that the great sinful enemy of this world is kama, or lust. Kama esha, krodha esha. Rajoguna samudbhava. When we have this passion to enjoy and it is frustrated, it invokes anger. Now, on the subtle platform, the desire to enjoy is through prestige, adoration, and success. In many ways, that goes deeper than the enjoyments of the flesh, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, the genitals. These types of enjoyments, no doubt, they go very, very deep into the heart, and we become very attached to them. But we see even people who could give up all of them become very attached to profit, adoration, and distinction. Pratishtha. Kanaka Kamini Pratishtha. The Acharyas warn us of these three attachments. attachments to the opposite sex, attachment to wealth, and attachment to prestige. Indra still had all his wealth. He still had all the apsaras, but he lost a little prestige. And that kama, being frustrated, created anger. And when we become angry, our tendency is we lose our intelligence. Have any of you ever had that experience? We become angry, we say something we may regret for the rest of our lives. We do something that we regret for the rest of our lives. Indra was blinded by his anger. Now we're going to briefly study the psychology of Indra at this time, because it's the psychology of all of us. If you have a boil on your body, how many of you have had boils? They're really painful. If you touch it, it really hurts. If a wind goes on it, it hurts. If somebody looks at it, it hurts. Yes? Because there's a disease there. That's why it hurts. Now, if you don't have a boil, if your skin is nice and healthy, then you can go like this and it feels nice. You can have somebody massage you and it feels, oh, nice massage, nice massage. But have a masseur massage your boil and see what happens. You'll be screaming in pain because there's a disease there. The disease of material existence is selfish, egoistic attachment, both subtle and gross, attachments of the mind and attachment of the senses. These attachments are like boils. A person who has no attachment whatever you do to them, Hare Krishna, it's not so bad. Yes? But if you have deep attachments to the degree you're attached to something, to that degree, it's going to really cause you pain and frustration when somebody attacks it or when you lose it. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha shonayevate. An intelligent person does not get attached to temporary things because they're the cause of pain in due course of time. The path of bhakti is not just giving up attachments. The path of bhakti is redirecting our attachments from the temporary to the eternal. We become attached to Krishna. We become attached to his name, to his form, to his wonderful pastimes. We become attached to the devotees because they're connecting us with Krishna. We become attached to the forms of devotional service which attaches us to Krishna. These attachments bring us great pleasure. They liberate our soul. Bhakti is becoming completely attached to that which is spiritual. And naturally, simultaneously, we become detached from the sources of misery. A devotee is not hard-hearted to the suffering of others. But a devotee wants to relieve the suffering of others, body, mind, but especially on the level of their souls. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was weeping
and expressing his heart to Srila Haridas Thakur. I cannot bear seeing all the suffering living entities in this material universe. Haridas Thakur said, there's no more suffering because you have come to liberate them all through the loud chanting of your holy names. It is the highest form of welfare work because it relieves the suffering of the heart, of the soul. So Indra was very much performing his service. Bhagavatam describes, dharmasya hyapavargyasya nartutayo pakalpate. When we're performing our devotional service, we should not become attached to the benefits that we're getting from our service. We should become attached to the service itself and to the persons that we're serving. But Indra, he got caught up. And we can't laugh at him because it may happen to us too. We get caught up. We get caught up with the association. We get caught up with the wealth, with the fringe benefits. We get caught up with all the glorification and honor we may be getting, which is just coming as a byproduct of doing our service. And that attachment is like a disease, like a boil. Krishna, he slapped that boil of Indra really hard through his words, and Indra was furious. He completely forgot that Krishna's God. He's completely covered over by his anger. And he approached the Samvartaka clouds. These are clouds that we have not seen in our lifetime. They are reserved for universal dissolution. When the Samvartaka clouds pour rains, it from Rastatala Loka all the way to Swargaloka, the whole universe becomes an ocean. Sometimes in Bombay, there's big rains, and the whole city is stopped. We have seen people walking with on the streets with rain up to their chest. One time there was a massive flood. It was very high. And on that day, I was supposed to go on an airplane to London. And how to get to the airport? None of the cars. They were all just stopped by the water. They stopped working, the spark plugs got wet, and people had to walk sometimes 10 miles to get to their homes. The trains were stopped, the buses were stopped. And our dear Srinathji Prabhu, do you remember that incident? He said, I have a car made in Germany that can go through all this water. So I got in the car, and he was just, we were the only car moving in the whole streets. They weren't streets, it was like a free tour to Venice. All the streets became canals. There were even some people with boats going down the streets. But all the cars were stalled and people, thousands, millions of people were just walking through this water. And I kind of felt sorry because Srinathji was going so fast that the water was going, and it was actually the waves coming off his car were knocking people over. I said, slow down, slow down. He said, I don't know how to drive slow. So we made it to the airport. And we got on the plane. I remember it was Gulf Air. But the problem is the runway flooded. And we sat on the plane for about 6 hours. And they had to close the engine and the air conditioning. And finally they said, go back into the airport. And we were there for about another 10 hours. So I realized the power of Srinathji Prabhu's driving. What the airplanes and the buses and the trains could not do. Because of his desire to serve, crossed over all obstacles. But anyways, what is that rainstorm? Samvataka clouds, the whole earth becomes an ocean. Indra ordered, direct all of your potencies toward Vrindavan and destroy it completely. For so many generations, they have been worshiping me on this day. And now these ignorant fools, these Brijavasis, headed by Nanda Maharaj, he stopped my worship due to the false nonsense logic of this talkative little ordinary child named Krishna. How is this possible? It is because Nanda and the Brijavasis have become proud. This is what he says. They have become covered by ignorance due to their false pride because they have so many cows and so many milk and there's so much prosperity in Vrindavan, so many crops, everything they get, everything is fulfilled. They have become proud. Therefore, the reaction is they have been covered by ignorance and I must destroy them. They deserve it. It is said that the world is a mirror of your own mind. It's a good example. When you're proud, you see proud in everyone. When you're lusty, you see lust in everyone. When you're a cheater, you suspect everyone of being a cheater. When you have a hidden agenda, you see hidden agendas everywhere. But if you're good, you can see goodness in everything and in everyone. If you're pure, you can see purity somewhere within everyone. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the reason I see faults in others is because I am honeycombed by so many millions of faults myself. Srila Prabhupada, when he came to New York City, he was seeing people who were, what can I say? According to the life in Vrindavan he was living at Radha Damodar Temple, there were people addicted to so many irreligious activities. Srila Prabhupada saw it. But that's not what he focused on. He focused on the essence within everyone. He saw the potential to love Krishna in every living being. He saw that spark of divinity everywhere. And he focused on that and fanned that. And if anyone reciprocated, even in the slightest way, even if someone just said, thank you, he was willing to give his heart, his soul, his life for that person. If someone just said, I like these gulab jamuns, they taste very good. Prabhupada said, take more and more and more. One person was coming to the temple and he just liked gulab jamuns. So Prabhupada gave him a whole jar of gulab jamuns. And he said, whenever they run out, come back and I'll give you another jar. So about once a week, that person would come back to fill up his jar of gulab jamuns, and eventually he became a devotee. He had no good qualification except he liked gulab jamuns. And ultimately, he loved Prabhupada for giving him gulab jamuns. And ultimately, because he loved Prabhupada, he loved Krishna. And then all his divine qualities began to blossom like a lotus flower. So when we see faults in others, if we're sincere people, we shouldn't just leave it at that. We should think, what's wrong with me? Yes, that fault is in someone, but what's wrong with me that I cannot see good in that person? That I cannot see a potential in that person? That I cannot see Krishna somewhere deep down in that person's heart? That's my defect. Indra was so plagued with pride. He was ready, willing, and determined to punish Nanda Maharaj and all the Brijabasis because of their pride. Hare Krishna. Thus ends the psychological analysis. So he told them, destroy now, and I will come with you with all the wind gods. The Samvartaka clouds, on the order of Indra, they quickly formed above Sri Brajbhumi.